welcome to the ABC edition of Daytime Confidential, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we discuss the 10,000th episode of All My Children, and I'm sure we'll figure out something at some point to discuss on General Hospital, because Reagan is joining us once again with her spoilers. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Well, welcome, Reagan. Long time no talk.
I know. It's been forever.
I know I edited a podcast a while back that I believe was a Girls' Night Out episode, but I didn't actually get a chance, of course, to talk to you on that one. So welcome back.
Thanks.
Tina, welcome.
Hello.
And joining us from Ion Soaps, The View from the Recliner's Edge, Belinda, welcome.
Hi.
Well, let's just dive into All My Children. It celebrated its 10,000th episode this last week, and it brought back Agnes Nixon for it. Going around the circle, just let me make sure, Reagan, you don't actually watch All My Children, right? You just watch One Life to Live in General Hospital, correct?
I used to watch All My Children, so I can keep up, but...
Okay, but you didn't watch the 10,000th episode?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, then, first impressions, Belinda, before we go in depth, first impressions.
Bizarre.
Tina?
Completely out of the whole line of where it seemed like the storyline was going. Just seems like came out of left field.
Context.
Okay. Well, I know a lot of people on the blog thoroughly enjoyed the episode, and I wrote a post on it. There were parts about it that I really enjoyed. I liked the fact that they had all the families together. I liked the voiceovers. I found it very interesting that certain people were missing. I didn't know if that was some sort of sign signal or lighthouse light beam that might be indicating stuff. I don't know. I'm just saying it's a little bit interesting that at least some people were missing. But let's go into why you think it's bizarre. Belinda?
Well, I've never heard this story about Pine Valley being founded by this woman named Aggie whatever, who wrote the wildly popular book called All My Children. So as an excuse to have Agnes Nixon acting overly medicated, she seemed like someone who had wandered away from the psychiatric wing is what she seemed like to me. The character, yes. Of course, Aggie. And if they don't do something to explain it further or feed in some backstory, then it's just going to stand out as being way weirder than unique.
Tina, why did you think that it was out of left field?
Well, because knowing that it was coming up, I had watched, I kind of watched like an episode or two before, and it just seemed like it wasn't completely flowing with where the storyline was. It just seemed like a stunt dumped in the middle, and that's not how tributes are supposed to be.
And I will most definitely give you that. I did have that sense of disconnectedness, because what I found interesting, and this is the thing that for me personally, I've mentioned this in other podcasts, but I live in an area where tornadoes are a very real thing. I don't know how real they are in Pennsylvania, but when the sirens were going off, there was like – maybe I missed it. It's entirely possible that I missed it. But I didn't see any indication that anybody knew that those sirens were like in mourning of the people who had died in the tornadoes that came through. Why – like I was watching this and I talked to a friend about it later. I said, okay, the sirens are going off. And in tornado country, if sirens go off, unless you know ahead of time that it's the scheduled appointment, you take cover. And then you had all these people joining hands. And so from a realistic standpoint, at first I was thinking, what the hell are all these people standing there praying when sirens are going off? They should be diving for the cellars. And then because I realized, oh, it's because of the 10,000th anniversary. And it's because they're memorializing the people who were lost in the tornadoes. And it was very touching. Like, I have to admit, the voiceovers that – I loved how they did it. I do agree that it did come out of left field and it was not well integrated. But I did find it touching. I just thought from a realistic standpoint, if sirens are going off, you do not stand there and pray.
Well, they did mention it beforehand. You did miss at least one scene of foreshadowing, because I believe it was J.R. was saying in Tad's living room that the exact time the first tornado hit, the siren was going to go off. There was going to be 1 minute of silence in remembrance of those who were killed, and then the siren was going to go off again.
I must have missed it then, because yeah. I tend to tune out when Tad's talking.
Well, that was, and then he wanted to know if Crystal was going to go with him to be at the grave during the moment of silence, and yeah, you must have missed a whole scene in there.
Okay. The other thing that I thought was a little bit interesting this last week, we talked about in last week's podcast and the fact that Belinda was not happy that what's going on with Taylor and Jake, but what is your guys' take on Amanda's state at the moment? I have always thought that her and JR would be a good pair, and I enjoyed them when they sort of were together the first time. But during that scene when they were standing at Babe's graveside, I thought that was a very interesting way to set things up. Would you prefer to see Amanda with Jake, or would you prefer to see him with JR? Tina?
JR.
Belinda?
Jake.
Ooh, well, I guess they've got the triangle there. I mean, if one of you is one and one is the other, I don't know what else to say about this last week.
I don't like the way that they have put this David Hayward to manipulating Amanda, the two of them, to try to get some kind of revenge on JR. That just seems like overdone.
No. Nope.
Like they're throwing too much in. Do you disagree?
Yes, I do. David Hayward's being a manipulative jerk, that's when he's at his best.
Oh, yeah. This is classic David. I mean, it's the fact that he was – I had forgotten how manipulative David can be, and I shouldn't have, considering the fact that this is the man that basically put Libidazone in Punch. But I was a bit taken back by he was basically encouraging Amanda to become a drunk so that she could get
right.
$5 million. I was like – oh, yeah, that's the David I remember.
No, but that's David.
It is David. It is David, but I was a bit taken aback because I had forgotten. I mean, I knew that I remember that I love David. I wanted Vincent Irizarry back. I just forgotten what comes along with David sometimes.
I just thought it was kind of creepy because of the age difference. I mean, I wasn't creeped out when Amanda, the, you know, Babe's best friend, started kind of playing tonsil hockey with her father. And, you know, perhaps I should have been. That might have been my first warning bell, but it didn't go off. And I thought, oh, well, you know, nice-looking girl. She's an adult. You know, he's a little bit older man, but that's interesting. I even said in my column that, you know, oh, that was interesting. She got to kiss the handsome guy. Great. But then to turn around in the very next episode or very next couple of episodes for him to be, it was almost like he was pimping her out. And I don't know David Hayward. I don't know the history of the character. I don't love the actor. I don't have all that going on for me. But I just thought, ooh, his daughter's best friend, and he's going to manipulate her like this. But if that's who the character is, then I guess I probably won't
David,
spend a lot of time liking him.
David is one of all my children's best male manipulators.
He's like a male Dorian.
Yeah, very much, very much.
Uh-huh.
Before we move on to One Life to Live, I just want to ask your guys' thoughts on the Erica-Adam dynamic. Because they keep going back and forth, and maybe it's the fact that I'm just enjoying it so much that I'm letting myself be duped, but I haven't quite figured out what's going on there. Tina, obviously, if you're going, yep, and with me being duped, now it isn't hard for me to be duped. Let's just put that out there. What's your take on that dynamic?
Oh, they're just teasing people like you. That's all it is. They're not going to go anywhere with it.
Well, I hope you're wrong for my sake, because I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Those two together just make sense. And it doesn't even have to be romantically, but those two sparring just makes sense to me. Belinda, you're a newer viewer. What's your take on it? Or a new recent viewer, I should say.
I am enjoying it. I think the two really spar well off each other. They have a nice tension, a good interaction. I'm enjoying it. Do I really expect it to go somewhere? Not so much. I really don't expect it to go anywhere. I have a question, though, because I missed a couple episodes in there a few weeks ago. What happened to Carmen? Did she drop off the face of the earth?
I don't know.
I mean, she literally, she went out with Jackson for dinner one night, and that was probably 3 weeks or a month ago, and we have not seen or heard from her since.
Maybe Jackson killed her.
Oh, please.
That would be an interesting twist. Isn't he like Saint Jackson?
Pretty much. That's why I was joking, but yeah.
Yeah.
Jackson wasn't always a saint.
But now he is.
I'm sure he wasn't.
Let's move on to One Life to Live. Now, Reagan, I want to get you involved because you haven't had a chance to talk yet, but over the course of this week, we had an ongoing discussion on Instant Messenger like we normally do each day. And throughout the course of the week, it was a matter of, I'm going home. I watched One Life to Live instead of first and General Hospital second. Or the next day was, I watched General Hospital first and I watched One Life to Live second. But this week, it seemed that you watched One Life to Live first, more so than General Hospital.
Every single day.
Okay, every single day. There we go. Hit it out of the park. Mm-hmm. Why were you watching One Life to Live first as opposed to General Hospital?
It was better this week.
Okay.
I mean, just put it simply, it was just better. They just because everybody was so good this week. I mean, there were parts that I was disappointed in. I kind of expected more when the baby died or when they first found out the baby was dead. But I just felt like everybody was so great and you had to find out what was going on with Marty and Todd. You had to see what slowly she was going to find out every day. It was like a little bit more of her past was getting revealed to her every single day. And I just thought that those scenes were incredible. So I wish John McBean wasn't there. I could have done without him, but
well, and you bring
I have
up,
to agree with that. I you, have to agree.
You bring up Todd and Marty, and I think it's a great topic for discussion because even though we're not going to discuss the rape mans, I think that Susan Haskell's performances and Trevor St. John's performance this last week was nothing short of astounding. I am going to have a very, very difficult time this week choosing who I'm going to choose for my performer of the week, because it's either going to be between Y&R and One Life to Live. It's going to be one of those two. Nothing else equaled those performances this week. Now, I wrote a post about the fact that Todd and Marty, the scenes and the acting was just amazing. And I was so impressed about, for the first time in Susan Haskell, because so many people had said before that they were excited to have her back, but I did not see it until this week. But when she was there playing that character who was getting flashes of memory and at the same time beginning to get realizations of what Todd had done to her a second time, as McBain was standing there, McBain did not need to be there. I don't know why he was there. He didn't need to be there. It could have happened.
He was the confirmation. Because as the truth started coming out, you know, he was the one confirming it all along.
I mean, I understood why he was there. I just didn't need him there.
Well, somebody needed to be there to play that part.
And it might be my distaste for that character, because I don't really like him.
Yeah, well, very few people, I don't know, love John McBain.
Unless you're in an ABC focus group, in which case everybody loves John McBain.
They got to do something about the gum. Oh, my God, it's so distracting. When he's sitting there chewing gum as he's doing stuff, it's annoying.
That's part of his tough guy persona, since they can't show him smoking a cigarette anymore. The whole gum chewing thing is supposed to be part of his mysterious...
Well, let's not get distracted by Smackers Are Us, and let's take and keep talking about Trevor St. John and Susan Haskell. Because I had written in a post about the fact that I'm liking how they take and are only giving her flashes of her memory. Now, Tina, I was talking to you, I think it was on Instant Messenger, and you were saying that might be a possibility according to some rumors you had read. Do you think, or let me just go around the circle, would you like all of her memories to come out and then it be she goes after Todd with a vengeance, or would you guys like to have Marty continue to be a character that is in fluctuation with what she's remembering when and whether or not it's true or not. Tina, what's your thoughts, first of all?
Well, to be perfectly honest, There, you know, Susan Haskell this week, she had some great scenes and she had some horrible scenes all at once. But it's only going to stay interesting for me if she only gets parts of her memory back very, very slowly. You know, at this point, there's no one else on the canvas to put her with. I do not see any chemistry between Marty and John. I don't see it at all. And sadly enough, that's where it looks like they want to go. There's really no one on the canvas for her. So in that mind, I would prefer that her turmoil stay that of a person who's just trying to recover their past.
Belinda, what's your take?
I think it's going to be much more dramatic, played out a little bit at a time, because she does have so much. She's one of the most complex stories with the most characters with the most complex history on One Life to Live because of the trauma of the gang rape, and then she had been such a little tramp before that, which was if you were watching at the time and. Please feel free to disagree, those of you who were watching. But she was such a little runaround. She was drinking and she was flirting with the boys and just a big tease. And then for this gang rape to happen, that was part of the drama of it at the time was, well, look how you were acting. You know, and it was hard for some people to be sympathetic to her because of the way she was dressing and the way she was drinking, the way she was tramping it up.
Whoa.
So
look at everything she did to, you know, Reverend Carpenter and
yeah.
All the lies she told about him. I mean, you know, you know, she was one of those victims that sometimes it was very difficult to
identify.
She
was not
with.
A sympathetic victim. She wasn't. So this is a turnaround in that way, because at first she was not a sympathetic victim.
So would you like her to get her memories back slowly, or would you
yes.
like to call it all come all at once?
I think slowly would be much more dramatic and be better for playing out on screen for the dramatic quotient.
Reagan, what's your take?
I think obviously them coming back slowly, that's the best story for her, because I think Tina's right. I mean, there's really – who are they going to put her with? You know, I think your story with Marty is her memory slowly coming back. And I hate to say it, but you got to have her a little bit conflicted over Todd.
There's no conflict with her feelings for Todd if she gets all her memory back at once.
Right, right.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. Some of people's biggest concern about Todd and Marty was the fact that, or in the big whole rape man's debate, was the fact that because she couldn't remember who he is, it was basically like a re-rape the second time. Would any of you guys be opposed to, now that once she gets her memory back, the possibility of them actually falling in love, or would that be too out of character for those two characters?
If her memories are all back, no, they can't fall in love. It's just not. That's
okay.
Well,
I don't see how. I mean, I can see like her if she's still trying to get those memories back, I could still see her fighting those feelings that grew while she was, you know, with Todd. But I don't know if she's fully got them all back that you can pair them together.
Tina?
Well, you know, if she gets all her memory back and then she falls in love with Todd, then she's walking down the road of all the other rape manses that have gone on in daytime, you're Luke and Laura and all that crap. At least at that point,
it's her decision,
making an informed decision. I love the fact that she stated right out loud, you rape me, you
mm-hmm.
rape me again. That was definitely something that needed to be said. That doesn't equal forgiveness for the storyline taking that turn, even though they acknowledge it.
Well,
if that makes any sense.
I would just like to make a quick going around the circle, because we primarily focused on this part of the storyline. But what did you guys think of everything else that took place, whether or not, I mean, if there was something in particular that we haven't discovered, just going around the circle real quick, what else caught your guys' attention, either good or bad, this last week? Tina?
Well, finally seeing Vicky throw Tina out of our life after all the crap she's done. But now if she doesn't do that to Todd, she's even more of a hypocrite, so she needs to toss Todd out on his rear once and for all as well. The whole Marcy staring through the window at Jessica's baby was so damn creepy. Anybody else get that vibe?
Yeah, it was a little creepy. I just, that whole thing, like, I was glad that Dorian finally, like, said something about why, you know, figuring out why the baby died, and she's going to dig for answers now. But it just, like, wouldn't, like, an autopsy be the first thing done on that baby that's dead? And when they find out that she didn't come to terms, or it wasn't a full-term baby?
Seems like they should be able to find that out, yes. And it'll also be obvious to Jessica's baby never took a breath. It never breathed outside. It was stillborn.
Yeah.
So an autopsy would most definitely show that. The baby that they have now as Star's baby, if they followed through logical medical procedures, it would be obvious it couldn't be the same baby.
Well, I agree with you all, but we're still in the same day.
Yeah, that's true. I keep forgetting that. Like, I keep forgetting that because it's
been
like...
days go on forever. It's so
been
confusing.
Like, what, five well, days now, right?
Just be thankful you're not on All My Children, or not All My Children, but As the World Turns or Guiding Light, where the days can be two in one day. That sometimes it goes so fast on As the World Turns, you get whiplash.
I mean, at this point, we're on the same day for well over a week now.
Yeah, it's time for this day to end.
They're taking advantage of the storyline we never thought we'd see, is basically what it comes down to.
Todd and Marty slept together. He went to the hospital. Star was still in labor. He came back. John was there. And Star's baby died, and it's all on the same day.
It's got to be
a long
estate,
though, because...
Todd hasn't
heard. Todd hasn't actually heard that Star's baby is dead. Last he heard, the baby was fine.
Well, that's because he walked out of the hospital, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Well, and it's a long-ass day, too, because didn't Tina have sex and puppies? She didn't have the puppies herself, but didn't she have sex and all that stuff in the same day too, and then show back up at whatchamacallit? I mean, this is like a 50-hour day.
No, it's really not. Truly not. But it seems like they're taking, you know,
what's time for them to switch the damn day? Yeah. It's not.
It would be better off if they were putting a clock on the screen, General Hospital did.
I was just going to say that for the Med Report. Well, that provides the perfect opportunity to switch over to General Hospital. Of course, having Reagan on the podcast to talk about her spoilers, considering she writes them for Daytime Confidential, is always a pleasure. Kicking things off, do you have a spoiler or two you would like to share?
Well, we've been talking a lot about Jake's kidnapping and all this Jason and Elizabeth and Jason and Sam crap that's going on. So that's all coming up. And there was something that looks like they've decided to go in a different direction where Jason was supposed to shoot Sam during one of these shootouts that they're going to have coming up, you know, because it's sweep. So fires and explosions and shootouts is General Hospital. But he's not going to shoot her. I guess they changed that. And then you're going to see a little payback on Sonny and Carly by Jax and Kate.
I was wondering about that. Rumors have been going around. Can you explore that a little bit?
It looks like Carly's walking in on them naked under a blanket. And Carly's got
shocking.
You mean... Jax getting some
revenge sex? Oh yeah, Jax sleeping with one of Sonny's sloppy seconds. Boy, I never thought I'd see that happen the 94th time.
You know, that's probably like my biggest gripe with General Hospital right now. They do not have an original idea at all.
Well, have Jason or Jax ever had a woman Sonny didn't have first? Oh, wait, Robin.
Robin and Elizabeth. Sonny never had anything with Elizabeth.
Ah.
And Courtney was his sister, so.
That's just ooh.
But I don't know what happened before he found out she was his sister.
Yeah.
Actually, Jason, he's gotten a couple of handoffs. Yeah. And
he's had his own.
But Jason had Carly first.
True.
Very true.
So, I mean, that kind of goes both ways over there. Jax, on the other hand?
Jax had Sam first.
Yes, but I mean they pretty much shared women except for what Chloe.
Oh, come on, he had Sam first by what, an hour?
Yeah, that's about it.
Well, and I don't know. Sonny, and Jax never got Alexis.
No, they were just always friends.
Now I want to go to another topic because word came out this last week that Aunt Raylene is going to be coming to town. What's that bode?
You know, I can't figure out if she's going to be just like a couple episodes or what. And she may not be coming to town.
What would the point be?
Something at Super Soap Weekend, something about Nicholas milking a cow. So I don't know if they go to see her
or if
she comes to Port Charles. But, you know, there's going to be this whole Nicholas, you know, in danger of being deported. And Nadine is like thinking completely in the wrong direction, that, you know, he wants her to marry him so he can stay in the country. And there's one rumor out there that she shows up at Windermere in a wedding dress.
Oh,
you know what? The girl is smoking something that she ain't sharing because she comes up with these, you know, a cloud will go past the moon and she'll be like, oh my God, that means Nicholas wants my body.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean that, I make it shit up as she goes along.
I like her quirk. They push it a little too far sometimes.
Well, they do that with Spinelli, too. That happens sometimes with quirky characters.
It's the exact same thing that they do with Scrubs and having them continually argue about the same thing for 5 years before they move on to the next thing for 5 years.
I don't think they've Scrubs, ever moved on from anything.
Scrubs is different. Scrubs is because the writers don't know what to do with them.
Yes.
That's
why
if
they would just put
same
one of them in the mob, then they'd know exactly what to do with them.
Oh, bite your tongue, Belinda.
Oh, yes, please.
Robin will become Mob Princess, the Queen of General Hospital's mob. Yeah,
she'll become like the new mob doctor or something.
Yeah.
They just don't know how to write realistic relationships. That's their problem.
Well, that is so true.
Going around the circle, one last thing about General Hospital before we wrap things up. What caught your eye this last week, Reagan, that we haven't discussed already?
Well, nothing really caught my eye. It was kind of refreshing, though, to, like, I don't remember if it was this past week or maybe it was the Friday before, to have Carly, like, finally admit that Sonny is just this thing that she can't quit for whatever reason, whether she loves him or not, or no matter how much she wants Jack. It was just kind of nice to have the character verbalize that and kind of like come to terms with that herself. That was good. I thought Laura Wright had some good scenes this week. I really thought she did a good job. I don't know. I'm just so, like, I hate to say it because I know Jamie loves how much mob stuff I do like. I'm just over it right now. Like, and part of it is I really do think that they're going to break up Jason and Elizabeth for good. And so part of the stuff that would normally excite me, this kidnapping stuff and all this mob stuff that's going to happen that I usually would get really excited for, I'm just not. I'm not excited about it at all.
What caught your eye, Belinda? Or would you like to address the fact that Kelly's burnt?
Well, yeah, Kelly's burning down was a real moment for me. It's been such an icon, such a big part of the show. What stood out most was the glaring absences at that point. And maybe we just haven't seen it yet. By time the podcast gets out there, perhaps we'll have seen Luke at the wreckage of the diner, or the other Spencer kids there, or Bobby. You know, it's just the absences, like Alexis's absence with James
Jerry.
Craig supposedly being at the bottom of the harbor right now. That makes no sense. Perhaps those things will be addressed The one thing that I enjoyed this week was Kate kicking Sunny to the curb. You know, well, perhaps if you'd ever gone to high school, you'd understand what I'm saying. Now get out of my house. I thought that was great. I've waited a long time for someone to stand up to Sunny like that. I thought it was fine.
I'll tell you what I hated about the whole Kelly's thing, besides the fact that they actually burnt it down, is that's something I would have liked to see a little bit more of. I mean, it's like this huge part of General Hospital, and it was Maxie looking through a window of them beating up Mike, and then the next thing you know, it's boarded up.
Right.
It kind of felt like it didn't get the attention it should have gotten, not even from, like, the Spencers, but just in general. You know, you'll
Well, we need at least a loss montage. Come on.
Yeah,
from the first time we saw Kelly's, maybe the first shot, you know? That would be great.
Tina, what's your take on this week? What's something that caught your eye, either good or bad, that we haven't discussed?
I really liked the conversation that Jax and Carly had on the pier, where Jax just told her, basically, I love you too much to, you know, watch you throw yourself away on Sunny. I really felt that somebody needed to tell that to Carly, too. It was about time. Mm-hmm. Because she really has, over the years, thrown herself away on Sunny. Kelly's, it's been renovated over the years, but there were still a lot of things there that, you know, definitely always sparked a memory. And it used to be such an integral part of the show. I mean, that's where people used to always run into each other. I still remember when the Quartermains were living upstairs.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone has lived upstairs. Every yep. new resident, every new nurse, every new bad boy that comes on that doesn't have somewhere to go has lived there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and definitely it needs some more attention. And that the writers don't seem to be giving it that attention is a glaring omission. And you're, you know, Bobby, I believe, is still the owner.
Yeah, the Spencers own it. What I thought when they brought Kelly's on, I think that they were trying to do something Ryan's Hope-ish. At Ryan's Hope, they had that wonderful family-owned bar.
Yep.
And I believe that when they first brought Kelly's on, they were trying to get some of that flavor into the show. And with the original Kelly family, I think they did a really good job of it.
Well, you know, with Ruby behind the counter, I mean, that was always... Yeah. You know, you could always go there to get something to eat, and there was always conversation, and lots of stuff happened at Kelly's. There were great fights at Kelly's. And then, of course, you always had Jake's for, you know, your liquored-up stupidity.
Right, well, but it was Bucket of Blood back in the day, back in...
No, it's been that. It's been the No Name. It's been the Outback. There's been Luke's. I mean, there's always been...
I liked Luke's. Luke's was around when I first started. I always wondered why they got rid of it, and I thought it's probably because that set was too fancy. They couldn't afford to maintain it.
Yeah, there were always different bars and whatnot to go to, but Kelly's has always been there.
Mm-hmm. At one point, does anyone remember watching when... they had a big cafeteria set at the hospital.
Yep.
And there was a lot of time spent in the cafeteria. It seemed, I miss that because if you've ever spent much time in a hospital, and hopefully a lot of you don't know what I'm talking about, but when you spend a lot of time in the hospital, the cafeteria is the hub around which the entire hospital runs. And, you know, if they're going to replace Kelly's as somewhere for people to run into each other and meet, it would be my hope that we would swing back towards the hospital and maybe go back to, like, a food court cafeteria or something like that.
How do you get, like, Nicholas and Jax into the hospital cafeteria, though? Nicholas and Jax or any of those type of characters?
Well, Nicholas is on the board and you know, Jax, he just kind of shows up anywhere he wants to anyway.
Yeah, very true. Do you remember back in the day the fights that Alan and Monica used to have in the cafeteria?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were always... They'd be yelling and screaming and...
Well, you know, it was funny because it's like the hospital cafeteria was for the doctors, and then Kelly's was for, like, everybody else, and where the doctors had interaction with the non-hospital characters.
Right.
You know, because that's where, you know, I remember Alan going in there and meeting with, like, Sean or Robert or whatever about something. And it was like there was this line, and you definitely had the hospital stuff and then the non-hospital stuff. And they kind of lost the hospital stuff.
Right, well, the line just moved so far to the left that it edged all the hospital stuff out. That's one of the reasons that I think I'm so fond of Scrubs. They do get annoying. It's not that I'm totally in love with them. They repeat the same thing so much, and it's very redundant. But they're one of the only ongoing in-depth storylines about the doctors and the nurses and in the hospital at this time.
On that note, we are going to wrap this episode up. We would encourage you to visit Daytime Confidential to comment on this episode. Click on podcast in the main menu and then scroll to the episode number for the post that coincides with the episode number on this podcast that you are listening to on your computer or on your iPod. Tina, as always, it's a pleasure.
Of course.
Be sure to check out Belinda's column, The View from the Recliner's Edge, at ionsoaps.com. Belinda, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Reagan, it was a pleasure having you back.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad it worked out.
if you have not checked out Reagan's spoilers on Daytime Confidential, be sure to do so, because they are some of our most well-read posts and tend to get lots and lots of comments. So,
yep.
And she'll even answer your questions on Fridays, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it's usually whenever it's a slow day. This week it was Friday. So when it's a slow day, we do Q&A day.
So it's rotating Q&A day, huh? Well, folks, until next time, we thank you for listening. So long.
Bye.
Bye.